Well, I asked all the those that came to represent Mama to stand. I'd like for you, and I'm not even going to make you stand, but all the moms, would you just give us a wave offering? Just raise your hand. Wow. What a heritage we have. We thank you for being here. And I want you to think back with me today, whether you're a first-time mom, whether you haven't yet experienced childbirth, but you're a mom-to-be, I want you to think back to the first time you really realized that you're a mom, or you were a mom. Now, I know there's some physiological changes and all that, but generally you're in shock about that time. I remember when our four-year-old daughter came to us and announced that she had prayed and asked Jesus for a live baby to pray for, to play with. Maybe the first time we realized it was really going to happen at that point was when Karen, for the third time in her life, developed a heartburn. We were still kind of in shock then. Maybe it's the moment you see that first ultrasound or sonogram. Now you see those in 3D, and you can almost distinguish the individual eyelashes. But you can see the tiny outline of that baby. You can see the head, the feet. Our little Malachi, our grandson Malachi, who was our thumb sucker until he was about 8 years old, in that sonogram, you could clearly see that thumb stuck in his mouth. And there are other things you can see, but we won't talk about that right now. But maybe it's the sonogram at the first one. When Matthew came along, they had just really introduced that technology, and I think I was probably in the first generation of the dads that got to see the baby before the baby was actually born. But in that sonogram, Matthew seemed to be saying something. It just seemed like his little mouth was moving, and he kept on trying to get the point across, and I finally realized what he was saying. He was saying over and over, life as you know it is over. And boy, was it ever. But it was at that point of that sonogram we knew Karen was officially a mom. And oh, what a journey it's been. Most of you wouldn't think this. You've seen Karen around here with the grandchildren and all, and you would never believe this. But I married Karen young. She would turn 19 one day. I married her the next because I was afraid if she got any older, she'd be old enough to have better sense. But when I married her, she was deathly afraid to hold a baby. She thought they were going to break. She thought she was going to drop them. She was just terrified of a baby. Boy, did she get over that in a hurry. And I was just amazed at some of the things that came instinctively to her. Like, how to care for a newborn baby, when to give it a bath, how to give it a bath, how to take its temperature, and all of those things. Boy, did she ever learn quickly how to hold a baby. But other questions really, really scared us. Questions like, what are we going to do when this creature learns to walk? Or later on, even more so, what are we going to do when this creature learns to drive? And we realized parenting was a big deal. Matthew was born, our first was born on Wednesday, and born early in the morning, and 4 days later was Easter Sunday, and we took him to church and had him dedicated as a four-day-old on Easter Sunday, and we realized on that day it was a very, very sacred and solemn occasion for us when we realized that God had entrusted to us a life, a soul, a never-dying person. And we've taken that responsibility very, very seriously. I remember comforting Karen, making sure he was all right, and then I ran to the window. You remember the window? Now they let you bring those creatures right into the room with you, and Dad can come, and Mom and grandparents can come, cousins, just anybody that wants to, but they wouldn't let us close to the baby at that time, so I ran to the window and I peered in, and I remember I had note cards with me, and I'd write little slogans, kind of like Charlotte's Web, Some kid. a real specimen, handsome boy, and on it went, future president. But it came time to leave the hospital, and it was kind of a strange feeling. And like, you know, do these people really know us? Is it really legal for them to let us carry this baby out of here and take it home with us? Do they have any idea that we can hardly even balance our checkbook? But take him home we did. Those times and questions occur throughout the course of our life. And in my case, often it's been the wisdom of Mom. The calming, quiet voice of Mom. That's been the one that's restored rationality. But there are some tough things that develop along the way. I remember in our life, when Matthew was burned, horribly burned, as he pulled hot boiling water off onto himself out of a microwave. I remember when Jacob had his very first seizure, and by the time I got him to the hospital, he was in full seizure, jerking in like an epileptic seizure. I remember the first day of school. Now, moms, this was most of you. Most of you had this responsibility, but it was the 1 year during the time when our kids were growing up that Karen worked full time, but it fell my responsibility to take Matthew for his first day of school. We lived about three blocks from the elementary school, and so I got him ready and, you know, fixed his little lunchbox and did all the things that Mom would usually do, and I walked him up to the school and found his classroom and started to walk him into the classroom, and the teacher reprimanded me. Believe it or not, no, you have to stay outside. It's time now for you to release them. And so I watched my baby boy walk in there, and I got emotional, and I looked around. I was more than emotional. I was a basket case. And I looked around, and in a semicircle around that door was a group of moms. That makeup and mascara was running everywhere. I'm telling you, it was awful. Just about 8 or 10 moms, and then right in the front of them, right in the middle of them, was this dad that was crying his eyes out right along with them. But you moms, most of you had that opportunity, and it was trying. Remember the first date when some salvage idiot wanted to take my daughter out of the house and out of my supervision, and I remember giving him my application to date my daughter. I'll share that with some of you if you'd like. And then there was the time when our first went off to college. We drove those miles to Trevecca Nazarene University and helped him move his furniture into the dorm and shook his hand and hugged his neck and drove home and cried together on each other's shoulder. I remember then when the first one got married, and I came home and cried on Karen's shoulder and said, "They ain't never coming home again." Boy, was I surprised. And then there's a time, moms, I think probably more so for moms than dads, because it just kind of falls that way. But when they call on the phone and they're acting a little strange and they're stuttering and stammering a little bit, and then they spring the question, "Would you prefer to be called Grandma, Nana, or Gran?" And she says, "What did you say?" Oh, the joy of parenting, and particularly of mom, of motherhood. Life as a mom is a constant roller coaster of emotions. They don't come, as the old saying comes, says, they don't come with instruction manuals. But God, the Holy Spirit, the Word of God is our roadmap. The nurture and support and encouragement of a Christian family, a Christian community that will help us along the way. We get through it. We learn. And today I want to share with you some biblical moms that could kind of serve as a pattern for moms, and hope that they'll be helpful. First of all, I want to talk to you about the mother of Moses. Now, this mom was one of the key players in one of the most important stories ever told. Certainly, the centerpiece of the Old Testament and the prelude to the New Testament revolved around this mom, and most of you won't even know her name. She's the mother of Moses. Now, don't say it out loud yet, but if you know her name right off the top of your head, raise your hand. The mother of Moses. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a congregation of folks who have been involved in church all your life. All right, where's the youngest child who can tell me the mother of Moses? Okay, Dixie, you're the youngest child. Jochebed, mother of Moses. She was a mother who modeled for us the high hopes that can make a difference, the high expectation that can make a difference in the life of a child. We first find the story in Exodus chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. These things happened. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to them. So there we find the story of Moses, born in obscurity, placed in a basket, floated in the Nile, and guarded by Big Sister. That's a pretty typical scenario, right? But Moses really had a lot going against him throughout his life. First of all, he was born into a slave family. Exodus chapter 1, beginning with verse 8, tells us, "And a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. So Moses was born into a slave family, a family that was not free to do as they wanted to, a family that was forced into harder and harder, more and more difficult labor with fewer and fewer privileges and comforts. So he had a lot going against him. Second thing that he had going against him was he was literally born under a sentence of death. Exodus chapter 1, beginning with verse 15. "The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiphrah and Puah, 'When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live.'" So Moses was born under the penalty of death, and it was miraculous to start with that he even lived. I can only imagine being a part of that household, having had three, what we call the littles, in our house for a few days. It's really difficult to keep them quiet enough to do anything. I can imagine all that they went through to try to keep the noise suppressed and cover the noise. But before long, the baby grew until it just was not happening. And they had to take extreme measures. So he was born under the death sentence. And then finally, as if all of that wasn't enough, Moses was born late, or he was the baby of the family. Older brothers and sisters, older siblings. Some of you know what that's like. You know, you've heard of the difficulty surrounding the middle child. Well, I was the fourth in a family of five, and I'm so mistreated and persecuted. It's a wonder I turned out as well as I did. Amen? But someone has described the life and the lot of the younger child, particularly the baby. They say that the babies have hand-me-down clothes. They wear hand-me-down clothes that are often out of style and don't fit right, but there they are. Put them on. Go to school. All the good rooms all the good toys, everything that's worth having is already taken, and they just have to settle for leftovers. Someone has said that, you know, when the first baby comes along and drops a pacifier on the floor, a mother runs and picks it up, runs to the kitchen, disinfects it by boiling it in water for 10 minutes. After it cools for another 10 minutes, she finally gives it back to the child. When the second child drops a pacifier, mom picks it up, washes it off in hot water, blows on it to cool it down, and gives it back to the child. By the time the third child comes along, mom picks it up, licks it off, gives it back to the baby. By the time the fourth child comes along, the dog picks it up, licks it off, and mom gives it back to the baby. Well, Moses didn't have a lot going for him, except that he had a good mom with a weird name, Jochebed. Who does that to a child? Oh, well. But she looked at this slave baby who was supposed, by all rights, by all means, was supposed to die. And she saw instead of in him a little slave boy with a sentence of death that's, come along late in the family. Instead of seeing all that, she saw a treasure chest of potential. Moms, your attitude, your view, the way you think about your child, your consideration of your child makes a tremendous difference in their lives. Many times along the way, we, maybe even the family, maybe even dad, would have given up, but mama stepped in. When he couldn't see any good going for the child, mama saw it. When you couldn't hear the voice of hope, mama heard it. In all those situations, Jochebed found a way to be there for her child. You're talking about a working mom? James Dobson and others have their own tale to tell and their own opinions about whether mom ought to work outside the home and all. But Jochebed had no other choice, and she took a full-time job just so that she could be near enough to influence the baby Moses. So she left her home, her household, her husband, all that was familiar, and she went into the palace to be the nursemaid of a baby that was rightfully hers. That's why mama, in our day, mama, those mamas that are kind of a reflection of a Jochebed type mom, they never understand when their child doesn't make the team. They're most shocked, or more shocked than anyone, when that child lets her down. The world saw a slave baby, but mom saw a man of God that he could use to split the sea in half and lead more than 1 million people out of slavery into freedom. Mom saw it. And no doubt during those growing up years, mom expressed it over and over and over. Most of you are familiar with, do you call him comedian? Do you call him songwriter, singer, former member of the Gaither Vocal Band? His name's Mark Lowry. And he, in humorous fashion, takes off on his childhood and his hyperactivity, his ADHD. And I've heard him tell the story how every night, just before he got his bedtime whooping, his mom would look at him, and her eyes would moisten, and the most tender look would come across her face. And she would say to that little troublesome boy, that hyperactive little kid that was always into something, she would say, "Mark, God's going to use you someday. God's got a plan for you, Mark. God's going to do something significant through you." And so He has. So when you're tempted to give up, moms, when your last nerve is frazzled, when you're just ready to throw up your hands and quit, if you still had the energy to throw up your hands, then listen to Jochebed. When she was tempted up, listen to her say, God has big plans for that baby. The second mom I want to suggest or to talk to you about, we don't even know her name. She just continues through antiquity and obscurity. You don't know much about her child. He's not mentioned very often, but he is mentioned in the final chapter of the Proverbs. And I think the context of the passage is most significant. Now, if you are familiar with Proverbs 31, the whole last half of that chapter, it exalts the virtues or the traits and character of a virtuous woman. And most of our moms, your mom, is one that you want to apply that passage to. The song that that they sang, it just talks about a mom who is a virtuous woman. But in the context of that passage, in Proverbs 31:4, we just find these words, kind of on the tail end of a little discussion. But it said, "It is not for kings, Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, not for rulers to crave beer." That's just a couple of several other things. In other words, for one who is destined as you are, one who has a future as bright as you have, it's not for you to be ordinary or to be less than ordinary. It's not for you to participate in the things that may be satisfactory to others, but there are higher expectations for you. So let's just talk for a moment about the mother of Lemuel, who was known for her high expectations. I read this week of one father who, upon the birth of his son, bought him a pocket watch. That's a strange gift for a child, but it's one of those enduring gifts that probably would become an heirloom. But on the inside the cover of that pocket watch, he had these words engraved: "I am raising a world changer." Moms, you never know. You never know what your child's going to do. Maybe it's your child. Maybe it's that young man or young woman who is finally going to unlock the mysteries of dementia and Alzheimer's. Or maybe it's your son that or daughter that is going to finally discover the link that is the cure to cancer. Maybe it's some other spectacular. Or maybe your son or daughter is just going to be a leader in a local church somewhere. Maybe it's not even a great large church, but they're going to stand as an example before boys and girls, before teenagers, young men and women. And one day, those young men and women are going to look up to them and say, "They modeled Christ before me, and I am a child of God today because of what they did." High expectations. Do not speak into existence negative thoughts, negative images about your child. You be the great cheerleader. Cheer them on. Let them know that you have higher expectations than for others. People tend to rise to the level of your expectations. I've been a long, long time studying pastoral ministry and church growth principles, and there's an amazing thing that happens in the church. It seems as though pastors who think their church is terrible, and there are those pastors, if you hear them when they're talking to friends and acquaintances, they're bad mouthing. But it seems that pastors that thought their churches were terrible, usually the church performed terribly. But there are other pastors, and I certainly hope that I'm one of them, pastors that just think every sheep in their flock is grade A. You know what I mean? Hey, man, look at yourself and say, "I'm grade A. All right, I'm top tier." But it seems that those pastors who expect the best and appreciate the best in their congregation members, their churches perform very, very well. And so it is with our children. We need to expect a lot. But are you listening to me, moms? Are you listening to me? Dads, it'd be a real good idea for you to listen along as well. Okay? Do I have your attention? Expect a lot, but don't expect more than you are willing to model. And somebody say amen. Did you catch that? Did you understand it? This whole thing of you do as I say and not as I do, it just don't fly. That dog won't hunt. Don't expect more than you are willing to perform in before them or to model before them. Zig Ziglar, one of the foremost in motivational seminars and so forth, said as in his childhood he was out working on the family farm. He was hoeing a field. He was doing about a half-hearted job of it, just barely acceptable job. And his mother said, "That might be fine for other boys, but you are my boy, and you are capable of much more." Amen? That's what we need to be pouring into the minds, the hearts, the psyche of our kids. "That might be fine for other boys, but you are my boy, and you're capable of much more." We need to teach them that family name really means something. I know some of you are thinking, well, pride goeth before a fall. And some of you are thinking, pride is the root element of sin. But I'll tell you that there's a sanctified pride that can challenge us and motivate us to rise against ordinary or rise above ordinary circumstances. And that's the kind of thing we ought to be teaching our kids. Our family name means something. Don't treat your child like a child when he is a man or when she is a woman. I read of one fella that had a friend coming to visit from out of state. It was a single young man, and he went to great pains to kind of do what none of us would ever be guilty of, but he knew his friend was single, and he decided he was going to fix him up with somebody. Had it all planned out, but when he showed up, Mom was with him. Her statement, "I hate to see my little boy drive all the way from Kentucky by himself. He was 30 years old," for crying out loud. Let your child become a man or a woman. Expect it. Participate in it. Encourage it and celebrate it. You know, this is not the most spiritual thing you'll hear, but I think it's important that in this generation that we just need to make some things clear. Just bring them out on the table. So expect that boy to act right at the table. Expect him to treat teachers and others in a position of authority with respect. What's the problem with all the disrespect, the shootings for police officers and first responders? You know, our world would have problems. Satan is just alive and well on planet Earth, and he's just going to create problems. But our world would be a whole lot better place if some moms and dads in every community, regardless of race or culture or social status, if they'd just teach their kids basic self-respect and respect for others and respect for authority. And there ought to be a whole chorus of amens. You can't control what is going to be modeled and taught in some of the communities, but you certainly can in your home. And Mom, there's nobody, and I mean nobody, in a better position to do it than you. Make that child pay for the window that they knock out. Here's a quote for you from an anonymous source. "Was your mom a mean, old-fashioned mom? Ours was. While other kids ate candy for breakfast, we had to have cereal, eggs, or toast. While others had a Pepsi and a Twinkie for lunch, we had to eat sandwiches. You can guess our mother fixed us a dinner that was different from what other kids had, too. Mother insisted on knowing where we were at all times. You would think we were convicts in a prison. She had to know who our friends were and what we were doing with them. She insisted that if we said we would be gone for an hour, we would be gone for an hour or less. We were ashamed to admit it, but she had the nerve to break the child labor laws by making us work. We had to wash dishes, make our beds, learn to cook, vacuum the floor, do laundry, empty the trash, and all sorts of cruel jobs. I think she would lie awake at night thinking of more things for us to do. She always insisted on us telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. By the time we were teenagers, she could read our minds. Then life was really tough. Mother wouldn't let our friends just honk the horn when they drove up. They had to come up to the door so she could meet them. I remember developing a real close friendship with a young lady who happened to be on the Tennessee District Impact Team with me. That was a musical group that was put together from the churches in the area. Her name was Vicky. And I asked Vicky for a date. And she said, "I'll have to ask my father." Okay. And so she came back with Dad's response. And here it was, folks. This has been a long, long time ago. This is before I even met Karen. Long, long time ago, but I've never forgotten this. And the highest admiration still is in my heart and mind. Dad said, "Yeah, you can go." Did I mention her dad's a pastor? You can go, but first he has to come and take family communion with us in our pre-Easter service. Do you think I resented that? No way. I admired that and I thought, boy, that's the kind of dad I want to be one of these days. Well, back to the description of Mom. While everyone else could date when they were 12 or 13, we had to wait until we were 16. I still think that's a little young, but that's beside the point. Because of our mother, we missed out on lots of things that other kids experience. None of us have been caught shoplifting, vandalizing others' property, or even arrested for a crime. It was all her fault. Now that we have left home, we are all educated, honest adults. We are doing our best to be mean, old-fashioned parents, just like Mom was. I think that's what is wrong with the world today. It just doesn't have enough mean, old-fashioned moms. Well, you can believe the mother of Lemuel had great insight that she was called to raise a future king. So she raised him as such. Mom, you are called to raise a future servant of God. Do it with all your ability. I must move on quickly. Let me just mention real quick a young man named Timothy over in the New Testament, 2 Timothy 1:5. And Paul says of him, "I am reminded of your sincere faith, which was first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded now lives in you." What is wrong with that passage? Let me tell you. It is written in the midst of a patriarchal society where women were seldom ever even mentioned in the genealogical chain. Where was Dad? You can bet that if Dad was present and was a Christian dad, it would have been Dad that was mentioned, not Mom and Dad. Now, I want to give a benefit of a doubt. Maybe Grandmother Lois' husband had passed and she was a widow, what we used to call a widow woman. Or maybe Eunice's husband had been a soldier and had been killed at war, but whatever the cause, these two moms, this generational family, were doing their very best to raise a young man in the fear and nurture of the Lord Almighty. Lois was a first generation. She was probably saved as a result of the testimony of one of the original apostles. She raised Eunice as a second-generation Christian and instilled in Eunice's heart a desire that her boy, her baby boy, would come to know Jesus Christ as Lord. And so she, as a single mom, now I want to say, on record, I want to say my heart goes out. I have the greatest admiration for moms that, for whatever circumstances, some absolutely beyond their control, are faithfully and ardently raising children by themselves, maybe with the help of grandparents, but they're pouring their lives into it and determined to raise them as children of God. No mother is perfect. You can count on it. And I know some of you are here to honor mom today, and you'd argue that that didn't quite apply as much to your mom. But none of them are perfect. We all fail at many things. But in this, don't fail. In this, do not fail. James Dobson said, the main job of a parent is to get the hand of Jesus into the hand of the child before it is too late. Let me let that soak a minute. Let me repeat it. The main job of a parent is to get the hand of Jesus into the hand of the child before it's too late. Napoleon, a revolutionary leader of the French armies, said, "Let France have great mothers, and France will have great sons." Moms, our hats are off to you today. Our hearts are grateful. We honor you. With all that we have, we honor you. We encourage you, moms. Work as if it all depended on you, and pray as if it all depends on God. Now, this final piece of advice: when your child is raised, when they're out of the home, even when they have established a Christian home of their own, your work is not over. Pray those grandbabies into the kingdom. I don't know. I've not read studies, and I really don't know who has the greatest influence, a mom or a grandma. But I'll tell you, it's been a wonderful, wonderful, exciting, awe-inspiring life watching the woman of my house, the woman of my dreams, the love of my life, become and function as a godly mother, and now pour her life day after day after day into the lives of those grandchildren.